Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Hello, and welcome to another Yield Street Athena Art Finance webinar. I'm Noah Kupferman, and I'm the host of this monthly webinar that we call The Yield. Please be sure to visit yieldstreet.com to learn more about our offerings and sign up to receive the latest updates. Thank you again for taking time to join us for today's discussion on what we are calling Sold. And the winning bid is? Our discussion today will focus on the very recent spring auction results at Sotheby's and at Christie's. These were sales of the post-war contemporary art and as well as the impressionist and modern art. These categories have truly been the engines of the art market for some time now, and we will discuss what all of these sales results mean for the future of the market as we finally and hopefully head out from this global pandemic. The structure of our discussion is intended to be candid and conversational. I encourage you to drop questions in the Q&A box. I'll do my best to make sure that the questions are all answered. If we do miss anything, please know we'll follow up with you shortly by email post-webinar. So in case we haven't met before, my name is Noah Kupferman, and I'm the Director of Business Development here at Athena Art Finance at Yield Street. And it is my pleasure to host this webinar and moderate today's discussion with Leslie Prouty, Senior Specialist of Contemporary Art at Sotheby's, and Cynthia Sachs, CEO of Athena Art Finance. So over the past several webinars, if you've been tuning in, you'll know we focus mainly on art fairs, on galleries and private sales, and of course, the art market's new favorite acronym, NFTs. Today, we're shifting our focus back to what we might call the marquee auction sales of the market. These are, again, the post-war and contemporary, impressionist and modern auctions at both Sotheby's and at Christie's. It is truly no exaggeration to say that everything over this past year has been under the shadow of the COVID pandemic, and the art market is certainly no exception to this. If we think back to where we were just a year ago, canceled auctions, canceled art fairs and exhibitions, the art market was in a tailspin. And it was only through a series of quick and complete pivots to digital and online was the market able to achieve any level of success that it did. And with this in mind, the art market faced a very key test just this past week in the form of what is traditionally the very peak of the spring auction season. And what we've seen driving the sales results and actually the overall market were many of the trends and themes that we have been discussing and highlighting here on this webinar over the past several months, namely strong interest in works by female artists and artists of color, surging demand and rising prices for late 20th century works, especially those by Jean-Michel Basquiat, the rise of digital art, non-fungible tokens, and of course, the continued and important shift to digital and online sales at art fairs, at galleries, and at auction. And with that, I would like to welcome Leslie Prouty and Cynthia Sachs. A very warm welcome to The Yield.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Cynthia, I'd love to kick off with you to kick off the discussion and tell us What have you been seeing in the market leading up to last week's sales?
Yeah, great. Thank you, Noah. And great to be with you, Leslie, as well. So as you were saying, I mean, really what we're seeing is, you know, a bunch of different themes. As you mentioned, the Basquiat market is booming. Basquiat, for many of you on the call probably know this, maybe not, but Basquiat, a 20th century artist, has become really one of the most well-loved artists in today's 21st century. And his market continues to skyrocket. Basquiat essentially stole the show this past week, selling three works for an incredible $157 million and represented the highest lots at both Christie's and Sotheby's. Christie's sold an important 1983 Basquiat skull painting at an astronomical $93 million with buyer's premium, and also sold a smaller 1983 collage on canvas for $13 million. Both works made up over 50% of Christie's total evening auction sales. At Sotheby's, a 1982 masterwork self-portrait sold for $51 million, accounting for almost 25% of their sales. The result was quite impressive, to say the least, particularly in contrast to where we were at the same time last year, which is exactly what Noah was referring to. So it's really incredible to see these results and just so wonderful, given where we were only a year ago in the market. Just quickly looking at digital art and NFTs, because no conversation would be the same these days without it. Christie's sold 9 CryptoPunk NFTs for almost $17 million versus a $7 to $9 million estimate. As such, the result was, again, outstanding for such a new collecting category that remains largely speculative, I will say, at this early stage in its life cycle. But more to say on this into the webinar. I'll save some of it for later. Just quickly, the minority and female themes continue to surge. So many new artist records were set in these categories. Highlights include personal artist records at Christie's. Lynette Yedom Bochy set a record-setting 1.6 million. Rasheed Johnson did the same. Micheline Thomas set her own record at 1.5 million. And at Sotheby's, two incredible records, Robert Colescott, $13 million, and Elizabeth Payton at 1.7. The auctions were so exciting to watch. I hope many of you did watch. And if not, I really do encourage you to do so going forward. It's been really phenomenal to watch as the market takes shape. And then just online sales continue. I'm sure Leslie will say a lot about that. And also the online gallery sales as well, even though we had our first physical in-person fair not that many weeks ago at Frieze in New York. The online gallery functionality, I'll say, continues, which is great to see as well. So that's what we are seeing overall in the market over the last few weeks. Right. And excited to hear what Leslie has seen.
Yeah. Thanks, Cynthia. That's great. Yeah, I was pleased to see that the Colescott actually went to a museum, because it's, I feel like everyone should have the opportunity to see that amazing, amazing work. I liked how you say that, you know, the two very important Basquiat and the third Basquiat that sold this past week, it's, you know, we're in a different place when a nice little collage sells for $13 million. So there you go. Today's art market. So Leslie, I'd love to pull you into our discussion and conversation with just a nice big softball open-ended question. How's the art market doing? Did it pass the recent spring examinations that I referred to earlier?
With flying colors, actually, and thank you both for having me. I think to really put this past week in context, we have to look at the extraordinary year that the auction world has had, along with everyone else, starting in March of last year. And I have, as Noah knows, a somewhat unique perspective in that this is my 39th year in the contemporary department at Sotheby's. So I've been here since we were a department of two people to over 50. And when the catalogs were like that big to when they got that big, and now we are online. And I have to say, in all the transformation that I've seen over these years, nothing has compared it to the last year. Now, a lot of where we ended up was seen to be forthcoming in the future. But as with many other industries, the pandemic kind of telescoped all that into happening all at once. So we were sitting in March when the pandemic hit in contemporary. We had an excellent sale, We had the collection of Harry and Margaret Anderson. We had the collection of Ginny Williams. We had a Major Lichtenstein. We had an extraordinary sale that all of a sudden it looked like we were not going to be able to have in May. So fortunately for us, many things were already in the works at Sotheby's. We had an extraordinary digital platform and were able to pivot in hindsight for 2020. 70% of Sotheby's auctions went online in 2020, and that was up from about 30% from the year before. So we were able to pivot everything online with a little bit of ease. We did expand that to also include and expand our buy now capabilities. And we created something called the Gallery Network, in which we partnered with some dealer galleries who may not have had the same kind of digital capabilities and offered inventory through the Gallery Network. So we were able to not only do that through our digital platform, but we had already been redesigning our e-catalog. And fortunately, that digital catalog, which we premiered with what, instead of being our May sale, turned into our June sale, we had a new digital catalog. And that enabled us to show everything in the evening sale with video, in addition to the normal things that you would find in the e-catalog. That shows you details, that shows you things in installation. And it's very user-friendly, the online catalog. And we devised for our marquee evening sales a hybrid auction. And Cynthia encouraged everybody to watch sales. And now is the time for you to do it, because now, instead of being one of the few hundreds who could come to our sales room, it is now capable to stream our auctions for anybody who comes on Sotheby's website. We had 1.7 million viewers for our May 12th marquee sale. So it's live streamed. We actually have cameras on dollies, and our auctioneer is in London. Hopefully next time he will be in the New York auction room again. But he's looking at phone bank screens in New York, London, Hong Kong. And we had very active online bidding. In fact, we, in our successful June sales, which were about $300 million in contemporary and impressionist and modern, we sold an $80 million Bacon. And the underbidder bid 73.1 online. So that's a record for an online bidder. So fortunately, we were able to, without a hitch, have a technical sale that you could bid online, absentee, or on the phone. So with that background, we had a pretty good year. We managed to, in all of that context, have an extraordinary year, which was very, very healthy throughout. Both privately, we had an extraordinary year at 1.5 billion private sales and over 5 billion through auction. So we knew that there was still a market. You know, people were on their computers. We expanded our audience. Over 40% of our bidders and buyers were new last year, and that all had to do with online. And of the clients under 40, we doubled that client base for us. So not only did we know we had the traditional market still participating, especially at the high end, but we had a new market that was very hungry. So this past week, between the two auction houses, over $1 billion worth of art was sold. So that, I would say, passes the test. And we went up 65% in the May sale as opposed to June. So it was a very, very successful sale.
Amazing. Well,
congratulations.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that. Yeah.
But I think for you and investors too, I would point out one thing that was perhaps a very good sign of a robust market. And that has to do with the fact that it was not only good at the high end, but also in the middle market. So the day sale rebounded from 48 million last year to 80 million, which is much more in line with the pre-pandemic. So it's a very deep, active market across the board.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. Congratulations on that. But first and foremost, congratulations on 39 years at Sotheby's. Wow.
I know, what an achievement.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. I was there back, when was I there? I was there back in the 90s, but I think...
No, I don't. Noah, don't date yourself, please.
Yeah.
Well, I would have to say this might not have happened in any field other than contemporary art, because not only does the auction business change, but contemporary art is continually changing. So it's not a static mm-hmm. body of artists. So I would do a shout out for auction if you like the art of your time and you like working as a teamwork. And it's the most global market at Sotheby's, very international. Mm-hmm. So I think that's contributes to my longevity. It's fresh. It keeps being fresh.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Good for you. Good for you. So I'd like to pick up on something really interesting that you just mentioned about the sales, about the market. Is so sometimes there's been this bifurcation between the top of the market, the bottom of the market, the middle of the market. And so there are times when we're looking at the art market and trying to sort of read the tea leaves and see what it all means. And the top of the market can be robust and healthy, whereas other parts of the market, that's not necessarily the case. But in this case, at this time, what you're saying is that it is the case, actually, that we're seeing health and strength across the spectrum of the market.
Yes, and I think this also has to do with the fact that it's very global. I mean, we've seen, and Noah, you and I talked about this, that in previous decades, when there have been economic reasons for the economies to go down, the top end is not necessarily as affected, the high wealth individuals. But with the global nature of the market, it does mean that you can access many different economies, many different levels of society, and many different interests. I think, again, the youth market coming into this and the younger collectors is very, very vibrant. So we just, in the day sale, set a record for a work sold in a day sale. We had a wonderful Mark Rothko work on paper from the 60s that was estimated 3 to 4, and it sold for 5.5, which is definitely a strong market. But I think you also look at the sell-through rate, which is what we call it, and that is the percentage of works that sell. And in the evening sale, particularly in the section that we're going to highlight in this webinar, we were 100% sold in the evening sale. And in the day sale, we were around the 85th, which is considered a very strong percentile. Anywhere in the mid-80s, you feel like you have a very strong market. And, you know, we sold to Joan Mitchell for 1.8. So it was not only current younger art, but the old traditional art that was selling very well. So that's right, a very robust sign of a market.
Yeah. I mean, in general, it seemed that sounds and feels very encouraging, especially given the year that we've all had that we're hopefully coming out of, fingers crossed. So you mentioned something really interesting when you're talking about your staying power and longevity at Sotheby's, this idea of renewal, this idea that contemporary art is constantly investigating and reinvestigating and regenerating itself. And there seems to be, over these past bunch of months, in spite of, or perhaps even because of this pandemic, a renewed energy in the market. And what some aspects that seem to be important are artists who are younger, artists who are women, artists who are people of color, artists who are what I suppose the so-called IRG, the identity, race, and gender focused artists. And they've played, all of these folks seem to have played a really important role in this renewal, this regeneration. Mm-hmm. And it's, of course, this mirrors what we're seeing in much of our society over these past year, which is hopefully, and it will continue as well. But I guess my question then is this a sustained market shift? Is this something that we can count on, or is this just sort of a flash in the pan?
I don't think it's a flash in the pan. I do think it's sustained because it had a nice buildup. For instance, with African-American artists, I would go back to even 2018 when we sold a major Kerry James Marshall called Pastimes, a large monumental work that sold. We had it at 8 to 12 million, which was considered a very gutsy estimate at the time because only two works had sold over 5 million. And it ultimately sold for $21.1 million. So that, and when you look at the growth of female artists that started with Joan Mitchell, Ruth Asawa, Helen Frankenthaler, we certainly continued to work towards a peak of that with a record for Frankenthaler this time last year. Krasner, if you look at all the top prices for Krasner, most of them have been set in the last 2 or 3 years, the top four in 2020 alone, same for Frankenthaler. But these things started a little bit earlier as a reflection of art of our time. And again, I think in particular for contemporary, you do want to refresh what the audience is seeing and what the collector base is seeing and kind of shift the narrative. And everybody likes the excitement of discovering areas of the market that have been perhaps quiet over the years or fallen by the wayside. And it's very exhilarating to reinvigorate the market with not necessarily new artists, but also the artists that have been there all along, but have not necessarily had the spotlight on them. So I think it will continue. We've seen with African American artists as well, continuing from last year to this year, we've set very strong prices for Charles White, who had before that been sold mostly in our American arts department, and Norman Lewis, who was very much around in the 50s and has come roaring past with his top two prices in the last year. And we're seeing the people who are looking and bidding at these artists diversifying. It's not just the same people. It's not feeling to us like a propped up market. It's definitely got depth and legs to it. And it's a wide variety of artists. This is a big tent. It can also be artists of color as well as, you know, Chinese contemporary artists, Pakistani. We set an auction record for Salman Tour. So it's a very big tent. And I think it's got collectors across the board interested.
Yeah, really interesting. It just seems really notable that there were so many records set at this past week's auctions, and Grace Hartigan, Alice Neal, Barbara Hepworth, Nina Chanel Abney, Rashid Johnson. I mean, the list Elizabeth Payton. And so it's just really, it's just very encouraging. And so if we could, for the slides, if you could move them along to the auction highlights. Thank you. So continuing on with this idea of new life and springtime regeneration. So as we come out of pandemic and as we enter into a new market cycle, should we expect to resume demand in sort of the same old familiar places, the same old artists? And oftentimes we see, you know, it's like the usual suspects kind of situation, although there were some notable disappointments, I suppose one could say, with some of what could be considered the old guard in both houses, really. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yeah, well, at auction, it will always depend a little bit on the luck of the draw of what does come up as well. And I would say the auction market has been fortunate over the last year to have some very good strong collections coming to auction, mostly from estates. This time, ours was the collection of Mrs. John Marion, which is not the sale we're looking at here. That was mostly masterworks from the 50s and 60s, from Clifford Still to Richard Diebenkorn, and including all the way up to Gerhard Richter. And that's a notable contrast because we had a very strong result. It was a painting that Mrs. Marion had bought from us for $16 million several years ago, and we sold it for $20. But on the other hand, Gerhard Richter did not fare so well at Christie's in the 21st century evening sale. But that is, I think, a matter of context. Single owner sales have a tendency to generate their own enthusiasm because of the vision of the artist and the high quality that you find. And that painting was, frankly, they were both 1992 Gerhard Richter paintings, and the one in Mrs. Marion's collection was frankly, a stronger painting. But you can say the same for someone like Alexander Calder. We had fabulous works from the 1940s that soared way above estimate, in our various owners' sale. But then when you looked at a kind of more B-level works, they did not have as many bidders, both at Christie's and at Sotheby's, and were kind of soft in the $1 to $2 million range. So it does have to do somewhat with the quality of what you have, but it also has to do, I think, with that changing narrative. Now, some things in the Christie's 21st Century Evening Sale, particularly the Basquiat, certainly had all the bells and whistles that you wanted. But then there were some soft spots with underperformances from Kippenberger, Christopher Wool. Same could be said on our side with some of the works that were unsold from Mrs. Marion's collection. So I think that has more to do with, on the one hand, quality, on the other, on one hand, estimates, and third part, that shifting narrative. You know, sometimes it's surprising, even if you have a great abstract expressionist, let's use de Kooning as an example. In my day, when I was starting out, a 1950s de Kooning was going to be, you know, start the races. Let's get those paddles up in the air. But now it's the 1970s de Koonings that bring all the record prices. Yet when he was painting them and Xavier Fourcade and other dealers were selling them, it was not what people were looking for in the 1970s. So some of it is going to be shifting narratives, but this is the best part about however you divide up 20th century, 21st century, modern or contemporary, there's a wonderful supply out there of this kind of art. And as long as the really good examples are out there, whether they be abstract expressionist or 21st century Micheline Thomas, if you get the high quality, if you estimate it reasonably, I think you're going to see a variety of strength in the market.
Sure. Interesting. Yeah. You know, full disclosure, I remember back in my Sotheby's days when I was a struggling early Chinese paintings specialist, I would be so envious of you folks in contemporary art in the sense that, okay, so, you know, the artist can always just make more. But whereas in early Chinese painting, it is what it is. And the, you know, the supply is fixed. So anyway, it's...
Well, you know, Noah, that'll segue into our discussion later about Basquiat. But you can track the oomph in some people's markets, unfortunately, to when the artist passes away. And back in the late 80s, and when Basquiat first passed away, that's when you saw, you know, the first signs of growth. Because yes, once you see a dwindling supply, whether it's either due to the artist's death or if you look at things like Monet's or even 1950s de Kooning, how many are in museums and how many are in the private market? It does even hit contemporary.
Yeah, interesting. No, thanks for that. Yeah, no, and I think it sort of bears repeating the point that you were making before about context really matters in our market, and the devil is in the detail, so to speak. And that sort of speaking to the idea from, you know, for the investors who are on the webinar and the call today, you know, art has much more of this, what we could call idiosyncratic risk involved, as opposed to a financial asset, which is homogeneous. They're all intended to be the same, and they act accordingly. One Basquiat doesn't necessarily act like another Basquiat, which is a perfect segue into Basquiat. it would seem that Basquiat is having a rather sustained moment in the art market of late. And as Cynthia mentioned in the opening, there were several important works in this past week, two in particular, one at Christie's, one at Sotheby's, that actually both did very well, but one did much better than the other. And I wonder if it's possible for you to sort of walk us through why that is that one made $90 million or so dollars and the other made $55-56 million or so dollars. And that's a pretty big difference.
Well, I think part of understanding the Basquiat market is also to understand the importance of the works for him of the 1981 to 83 period. And as with many artists, I referred to de Kooning, somebody like Monet. There's the early classic art when an artist first bursts onto whatever the art market is at the time and gains his reputation, becomes the darling of the art world, and then continues to paint from then on. Basquiat, of course, had a relatively short career compared to many artists, but his 1981, 82, 83 paintings are considered top blue chip, what you absolutely want to have. And if you look at the top 20 works at auction, all but one of them are from that period. There's one 1984 painting that kind of snuck in. And I think the reason it snuck in is because it was also a painting of one figure, one head. And you referred to skull paintings, Cynthia, and that is within the 1980s, that one more step up to the stratosphere. And the three most the two most highest prices, one that Christie sold this past week, titled In This Case, was a very large head, skull, bared teeth, brilliant red background. The kind of pendant painting to that was sold by Sotheby's in May 2017, another very large head with a different colored background. That sold for $110.5 million and still is the top price, along with one other head that is in the Broad collection in New York. Those are considered the three iconic head paintings that you would want. Now, I think it's telling that the estimate on request for the Basquiat Christie's, often auction houses will not print the estimates. They'll put estimate on request because they kind of want to gauge the market. It was around $55 million. And that is the range for the third highest price, a 1982 Basquiat, $57 million. So the price that we got for our painting, which was $50 million, is definitely in the next best tier for Basquiat. But you have the $200 million paintings, and then you have $57 and below.
So Leslie, I just want to make a comment on that because these numbers are super high.
Mind-boggling.
But correct me if I'm wrong, please, but these paintings 10 years ago were $5 to $10 million paintings, right?
Yeah.
And you can, 50 to $100 million paintings.
Yeah.
So like the growth on these has just been exorbitant.
Well, and it just takes that one painting, the one that we sold for $110 million, to kind of open the floodgates of what is permissible and makes you kind of, well, I'm only paying $57 million. That's not too bad. So yes, it was a huge jump. And to put it in real contrast as an investment, the work that sold at Christie's was also up at auction back at Sotheby's in 2002 and sold for $500 below $1 million. Now, the person who sold it at Christie's did not buy it from that sale. They bought it a couple of years later, but you can rest assured that they paid far, far less for that painting. So yes, and in incremental things, you can put that with some other artists. We had a very, very bold moment with the Colescott that you referred to, where the record price for Colescott was $900-something thousand, and based on the importance of this one painting, and for your viewers, it was a kind of George Washington Carver crossing the Delaware, and it was based on the famous painting of George Washington. So it's a large historical narrative that obviously is Colescott's masterwork, but has a lot to say about African-American history and its place in our culture. And we boldly guaranteed it at $9 to $12 million. And we're justified in getting a price of well above that and selling to a museum. But sometimes you have to be bold based on what that piece is. But does that mean the next Robert Colescott is going to be estimated at that level? No, it doesn't.
Right. Was that picture a third-party guarantee, or what was it?
No, that's what they call a house guarantee. It did not have a third-party bidder.
That is risky. And
it is bold. Yeah, it's not whiskey. It was bold.
Yeah. So it's interesting. What you mentioned though about the way the art market functions with regard to, so the Colescott highest price ever made at auction before this past week was $900,000+, and now, my gosh, it just, you know, blew right through it by just multiples. So if you could just sort of walk us through, does that mean then that everyone who has a Colescott is sort of jumping up and down and saying, now my picture is worth that much more? Or,
well, to a certain extent, and this goes back to the whole question about artists of color and women artists, a rising tide does lift all boats. But as time goes on, there is going to be the same kind of judgment and maybe plateauing at certain levels for an artist. And we can even say that for Basquiat. And, you know, not every Basquiat is going to all of a sudden be much higher in value if it happens to be a late Basquiat. So in some respect, yes. But for Colescott, you do have to take into account what the next few sales will show. Because one price might be an anomaly, two prices might indicate a trend, three, four, five prices at this level, you have a market. And so going back to Basquiat, I think you can say there's a very, very strong market between 20 and 50 million, because you have quite a few paintings selling at that level, including one in Hong Kong earlier this year at Christie's. So you will find that the more prices you get at that level, the more of a market it is. So Colescott has to be filled in a little bit. Although I will say the amazing thing about Colescott is some of the top prices in the last year or two were achieved at Sotheby's Hong Kong. So it is very international. It's not just an American market.
Yeah, I would just say, Leslie, the way I'm feeling it right now is there's been a major shift in the velocity of sales and growth in sale values. And I don't know if it's just me looking at it from kind of the outside looking in, but it seems as though from even March to June, if you're comping different artworks, it's a pretty dramatic shift. Is that fair to say?
I think so. And I think part of that might be if you also put in a larger context of the pandemic, because it's very invigorating. Just this past 2 weeks, more and more people were actually able to come to Sotheby's and to Christie's and to Freeze Art Fair. Going back to a year ago when we had our June sale, it was probably one of our most gorgeous exhibitions with the Anderson property and Ginny Williams. And very few people were able to actually see it in person. Many New York collectors were actually not even in New York City. So this time it was very invigorating to see people come back into the building again, to see people fly in from other parts of the United States for Freeze. And it was more of a feeling of art event. So I think it was a cumulative optimism that we were feeling, with also the economy feeling optimistic. So there is momentum.
I also want to give a shout out to your auctioneer, quite frankly. Oliver Barker is just
wonderful.
Incredible. He's been incredible and really just so noteworthy. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of an factor as well.
It has. I mean, he made the transition from, you know, being in person to being in a room with monitors very, very seamlessly. And he also is able to do it for the full length of the evening, which I will say is a long evening, with Impressionist and Modern being the same night. But Ollie is quite practiced. We do have a lot of information going into the sales, but he is able to deploy it really very, very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And well done on all parts. So as Cynthia, as you mentioned earlier, no discussion in the art market is complete without talking crypto and non-fungible things and tokens and whatnot. So it would appear that this year, cryptocurrencies, crypto art has had its coming out party. Certainly in the art world it has. Sotheby's has accepted cryptocurrency for the work by Banksy, which sold exceedingly well. The Christie's sold as you mentioned earlier, the CryptoPunks, also accepting crypto for that. So we know that there are new collectors coming in and maybe who are new to the art market, but not new to the crypto space. But aside from that, from where you sit, from a finance perspective, from an art finance perspective, how are you viewing this? Thumbs up, thumbs down, positive, negative, neutral?
Couple of thoughts, I guess. I think it's positive, right? I think the markets are shifting. I think there's a lot of question over crypto and for so many different reasons, right? But if we think about the world before the internet, right? No one understood what that was going to be or what that was going to turn into. And so look where we are today. The world doesn't exist without it, right? So I do think that crypto will have its place, a more stable place, but right now is very much getting accepted. I think the art market has done an incredible job, you know, being kind of a leader in this, right? They were forced, and I've had many conversations with senior people in the art market, forced to think about and accept crypto. And I don't think that was an easy decision for them to make, quite frankly. And I think when they realize that the crypto market is truly has an exchange, right? And that the crypto can be converted to dollars. So when they do accept crypto, they're converting it to dollars and looking at it that way. I'm imagining they could be storing them and using them in other purchases. I don't know, but they have to make payments, obviously, from these sales to their people, to vendors, you know, so it's a matter of who's accepting what, but they really made a huge leap and are really a market leader in this. I think they also benefited from the fact that NFTs are traded on Ethereum, and the Ether currency is one that is more liquid than most. So I think they were also able to get comfortable around the currency that was essentially of choice for the NFT platform. And the kind of the combination of all of that allowed them to kind of propel. And with that, valuations are going to propel, right? The one thing I've been saying about NFTs is that whether you like digital art or not, believe there's value or not, what it does really bring you is the credibility and the trust behind the provenance and kind of the blockchain that is memorializing that. That's really valuable in the art market and something the physical market has kind of always, you know, had to deal with. And I think that's only going to make the market stronger. And even the physical side, I think, will follow suit. There's a lot of different technologies today that are going to allow that to happen. And almost, again, what I think will happen is you're going to have a little bit of the haves and have-nots where ultimately, over time, as even physical artwork get on the blockchain, those artworks are going to be more valuable. And the ones that are of similar, comparable likeness to those who aren't on the blockchain, I think might not do as well. You know, it's kind of like seeing how postmodern contemporary started taking over impressionist, you know, way back when, you know, there was just different reasons to like post-war away from the beauty of the artwork. You know, you felt better about it. You know, it was more newly created. It was post-war. You got comfortable with that. So I just think the similar themes are happening. And Leslie, I don't know how you feel about it. You've obviously seen a lot and you know, please correct me if you think I'm going in the wrong direction with that. But from a kind of a finance visionary perspective, truly, I see it as a game changer into another level in the art market.
Yeah. Well, I think it definitely has its niche and is going to stay in some capacity. My virtue of being part of a very large department is I have colleagues who are taking the lead in this. So you can certainly ask them more specific questions than me.
Yes.
But we have had our own NFT auctions this past year, and they were quite successful. And accepting cryptocurrency is something that we are exploring cautiously, because as you said, it is a matter of process, which might be different from country to country. And we're, after all, a global, global company. And I think the seller has to be on board as far as cryptocurrency being accepted for work. So we're all learning this as everybody else did. But you also said it is fascinating because it's not just in the technical matter of conversion of currency, but the whole concept behind NFTs is a democratization of the art market, particularly from the aspect of the artists themselves, that this might take away the whole structure of the primary market of the dealers and then the resale market of auctions. So there are so many different levels of how this is going to settle over the years, but it's just going to take a long time to really see how it plays out.
Right. So stay tuned.
I give Sotheby's a lot of credit for accepting it for the first time for physical artwork, which is the Banksy, which just kind of sets another, you know, benchmark for the next, right?
Yeah. And the bidders were both people who were going to pay in US dollars and people were going to pay in crypto. So it was a mixture of things, but
Great. Before we have to wrap up, I'd like to open it up questions from our audience. We have a question that has come in for all of the panelists. Curious what the panelists' view is of what is causing this strong pricing. And related to this, do you think that art is an inflation hedge? Mm-hmm. So we have some art and we have some finance.
Yeah, the last part of that seems geared to you, I would think.
Yeah, I would just say kind of the two major parts of that are, first, the online presence. And as Leslie said, she went from a few hundred people in the room to 1.5 million plus in viewers, right? And people attending the auctions. That's massive in terms of now putting kind of a depth into the market and really now getting people looking, involved, buying. As you start buying, you buy more, you collect, right? And it grows and grows, and you grow maybe upward in terms of your buying power, I'll say, or the class of artworks that you buy into. So just having a bigger market, right then and there, anything's going to go up. And then I do think inflation, I've been saying this now for probably since last summer, is that everyone knows what's happening in the market with regards to inflation, with kind of all the money that's come in. And I think that people are figuring out, where do I put my, where do I kind of diversify? The traditional markets have been really volatile over the last year and difficult to understand. Right now, you know, generally they've been strong. We've had a couple of weeks, obviously a little weaker, but the trend has been massively up. That's all good. But also it's a matter of, where do you find yield and how much risk do you take? And I think, and Leslie, I'd love to hear your views on this, but you know, art is one that's been underinvested in. So I think a lot of people look to physical assets, gold, oil, what have you, that have done well, you know, in inflationary times as an inflationary hedge. And art is the same. And in difficult times, art does well. And now in inflationary times, just kind of, you know, that exacerbates. So I think people are looking to art to invest, not just collect, even though that's lovely, but really as something more meaningful than that from a financial perspective. So it's a combination of multiple factors, but we're sitting in a very, it feels, strong moment. Whether that continues, who knows?
And I will kind of hedge that. I would say yes, especially being in the contemporary market, which has been the one of greatest growth in the auction field over the last 30 plus years. There is, however, a built-in inherent risk and volatility here, in that there are shifts. I called it a shift in narrative. There can sometimes be a shift in taste. You should diversify, because some things are going to do extraordinarily well and other things may not do quite as well. We were all talking, you know, there were several condos over the week, and by and large, they did well, except for one that had been on the market in 2018 and did not sell in Christie's sale. And we were not really sure why, because it was a perfectly fine painting. Same for the Rothko they had. We sold it in the collection of Mrs. Paul Mellon for in the region of $40 million, and it sold last week for $33 million. Mm-hmm. So yes, it does definitely have very good luxury market, and I'd say as long as things like jewelry and real estate are doing well, art does extremely well. But diversify, and the bottom line we try to say to people is, what you're buying, appreciate and like it, because not everything is going to go up in value. So at least like it on your wall. But yes, it does have a very amazing capability to quadruple and by many, many factors go up in value.
To your point, it's historically at least been a very buy and hold asset class, right? So be prepared to like it and be prepared to hold it for quite some time. And it to trade it is very difficult. So, you know, just think long term.
Yeah. And if you're in a market that's going way, 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 way far up and you're buying on the upward trend, Cynthia is quite smart. You may have to hold on to it for a while before you can't flip it is the word. Because at some point, it's like any crest of a wave, there is going to be a dip at a certain point. So you may want to look at it in more long term to look at it as a riding out the wave.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. And so enjoy it on your wall, unless of course it's an NFT, in which case that's a whole other can of worms or ball of wax or whatever you want to call it. I want to be mindful of time, and I'm afraid that we're going to have to just leave it there today. I would so much just like to continue chatting with both of you about these topics. However, we are just about out of time. And so I want to thank both of you, Leslie Prouty of Sotheby's, of 39 years at Sotheby's, by the way.
Almost 40
years at Sotheby's.
Next month.
And Cynthia Sachs, of course, of Athena Art Finance, for taking the time to join us on The Yield. And thanks to all of you for logging in, for taking interest in our market and these very interesting developments. Please be sure to visit yieldstreet.com to learn more about our offerings. Be well, and we hope that you will join us next time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.